This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
When the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Reporting that reflected poorly on Joe Biden. And these new documents shine light, significant light, on how that censorship, first by Twitter and then ultimately by Facebook, was the byproduct of clear collusion, clear collaboration by the Biden campaign and Democratic Party officials on the one hand, and the highest level Twitter executives on the other, apparently done without the knowledge of CEO Jack Dorsey. And I want to go over some of these documents. I want to discuss with you what they reveal, the reason why they're so significant. And before I do that, though, I just want to remind you of some of the key points about this story, because it has truly been disappeared by most of our corporate media that simply just doesn't discuss anymore the extraordinary fact that big tech, led by Twitter, ended up barring, censoring any discussion of serious reporting that reflected on the ethical problems of the leading presidential frontrunner, now the president of the United States, Joe Biden, all based on an absolute lie that came out of the bowels of the CIA and that was ultimately spread and ratified by our nation's leading corporate media outlets, namely that the documents on which that reporting was based came from a laptop, Hunter Biden's laptop, that in the words of the CIA and the ex-intelligence officials who disseminated it, was, quote, Russian disinformation, a claim that had contained within it two separate claims. One, that it was in some way the byproduct of actions by the Russian government. And second, disinformation, that somehow these documents were fraudulent or forged or in some other way deceitful. And it turns out, as even these media outlets now admit, now that they fulfilled their goal of getting Donald Trump defeated and Joe Biden elected in 2020, they all now admit, after nothing can be done about it, that all along that claim was an absolute lie. Russia had nothing to do with the production of these documents, nor the reporting, and that far from disinformation, these documents, especially the critical ones that shine so much light on what Joe Biden was doing in attempting to pursue lucrative deals in Ukraine and China, using the influence he wielded as vice president and may wield as president in the future, that so much, all those critical documents were not at all disinformation, let alone Russian disinformation, were in fact fully authentic. And so when you look back on what happened, the collusion of the U.S. security state, which invented the lie, the corporate media that disseminated and ratified it despite having no proof that it was true and despite now admitting it was a lie, and then finally big tech, which censored the story, and I don't mean just somewhat discouraged, I mean they brute censored the story. Twitter actually implemented technology that blocked you from any link to the New York Post reporting, even in private messages. I'll never forget that day when I went to go discuss the reporting with a friend who's a reporter in the media to discuss with him the New York Post story, and I showed him a link to the New York Post reporting, or I tried to anyway, and a message popped up saying, this link cannot be posted because it has been deemed by Twitter to be unsafe. Reporting by the oldest newspaper in the country, the New York Post, about the leading presidential candidate, Joe Biden, had been barred, banned, prohibited by Twitter using its technology on the grounds that it was unsafe. That is an extraordinary interference in our domestic politics, an extraordinary attempt to protect Joe Biden by a union, a trinity of these three power centers, all based on what everyone now admits was an outright lie invented by the CIA, that these documents were Russian disinformation. So before we get to these new documents, which shine important light on what happened, let me just go take you through the quick timeline to remind you of exactly what it is that took place. The New York Post on October 13, 2020, less than 3 weeks before the presidential election was to be held between Joe Biden and the incumbent Donald Trump, broke a major story that Donald Trump was pursuing business activities in Ukraine, or rather Joe Biden was pursuing business activities in Ukraine along with his son, Hunter Biden. You probably recall that a business company, an energy company in Ukraine, Burisma, which had all kinds of corruption prosecutions and other problems with the Ukrainian government, decided to hire not the son of a Ukrainian official, which is how it's done in the United States. You hire a relative or a friend of a major politician when you have a problem, and you sort of pay him legally in order to then get influence with the government. The Ukrainian energy company Burisma, showing you actually ran Ukraine back in 2015 and 2016 and 2017, didn't hire the son of a Ukrainian businessman. They hired the son of Joe Biden. Why? Because Joe Biden was running Ukraine for the Obama administration. He was really its ruler, its colonial ruler, after the United States has succeeded in overthrowing the government of Ukraine and installing a pro-EU, pro-US regime in Kiev. As you probably remember, Victoria Nuland, the neocon who worked so closely with Dick Cheney during the Bush administration's war on terror, somehow reemerged in a Democratic administration, in the Obama administration, in Hillary Clinton's State Department to run Ukraine on behalf of the Obama State Department. And she had that famous call that leaked where she was basically planning who should be the new Ukrainian leader in 2014. And they picked the prime minister they wanted, who they thought would serve U.S. interests, and that's who ended up being installed in Ukraine. That was the regime change in 2014. And ever since then, the U.S. was running Ukraine all the way up until this year when Russia invaded Ukraine back in March. And so this Ukrainian government company, Burisma, wanted influence. They wanted to stop these prosecutions from being aimed at them, and they therefore paid Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, the vice president's son, $50,000 a month in order to, obviously, gain influence with Joe Biden. Hunter Biden had absolutely no experience in the energy industry, let alone in Eastern European energy market. There'd be absolutely no reason if you were a Ukrainian energy company to pay Hunter Biden to sit on your board and pay him $50,000 a month, $600,000 a year, except to get untoward and illicit influence with Joe Biden. And so when Hunter Biden took his laptop to a repair store in Delaware in order to have it repaired and never picked it up, that repair owner, the owner of that repair store, after 90 days, it's considered abandoned, took it, saw that it was Hunter Biden's laptop, and gave it to Rudy Giuliani, who eventually gave it to the New York Post. The New York Post was able to use those documents to break major stories about what Joe Biden first was doing in Ukraine. That was the first story in 2013. And the second story, the day after, was what Joe Biden was doing in China, namely Hunter Biden and his business partner, Tony Bobulinski, who liberals have been trained to laugh at the mere moment that you utter that name in order to just dismiss the entire story as trivial, that Joe Biden was pursuing business deals in China, obviously based on his influence as the former vice president and one of the leading frontrunners to become president of the United States. There was a famous document the New York Post cited that was a deal memo involving Bobulinski and Hunter Biden that described the business terms of one of the deals they were pursuing, in which there was 10% of the profits reserved for what they called the big guy in the memo. And Tony Bobulinski has subsequently acknowledged and admitted that the big guy was always how they referred to Joe Biden. So at the very least, the New York Post reporting raised immensely serious questions about the ethical problems and the ethics of the Biden family and the way in which Joe Biden was trying to exploit and abuse his political influence to convert it into profit for his family, for his son, for his brother, and for himself. This is major reporting. Less than 3 weeks before Americans were going to go to the polls in a very tightly contested election and decide whether they wanted Donald Trump to continue as president for the next 4 years or Joe Biden to do so. Obviously, Americans have the right to learn about this reporting. That goes without saying. And yet, the CIA and the U.S. security state were petrified that Donald Trump was going to get reelected. He almost did win that election. As you know, many people believe he actually won. I'm not among them, but certainly it was a very tightly contested election. And there was all kinds of shenanigans and all kinds of fraudulent collusions between major American power centers going on to ensure the defeat of Donald Trump. Time magazine unwittingly talked about it as though it were a good thing. We recently saw a video that was released of an interview by Sam Harris, who used to be the leader of the intellectual dark web and has since become a sort of resistance liberal of the most banal type, essentially mouthing, reciting, expressing the prevailing mentality of liberal America, which is that Donald Trump is such a menace, is so threatening and dangerous, said Sam Harris, that anything that had to be done to ensure his defeat, lying, censoring, manipulating the American public, any of that was not only justifiable, but morally urgent, because the cause of defeating Donald Trump and preventing him from being president for another year was so overarching that no morals or ethics were permissible. They had to do anything that they could. And so when this reporting emerged, and when it was obviously a threat to Joe Biden, the CIA, these ex-intelligence officials who were so deeply entwined with our media corporations who work for them, who influence and dictate what they're going to say, released a letter. And I have to say, the letter, if you go and look at it, by these 50 ex-intelligence officials, was way more honest than what the media corporations took that letter and purported to describe it ended up saying. This letter said, "We have examined the reporting based on the documents in the Hunter Biden laptop. And although we cannot say with certainty, and in fact, we have no evidence at all to prove, we believe in this like intuitive way, based on our decades of experience as intelligence professionals, that it seems like it kind of has the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. It just, we feel it in our bones. It just seems like something Russia would do." And the first reporter who unsurprisingly got that story, who arguably is the single leading propagandist for the CIA and the U.S. security state, she publishes whatever she's told to say by the CIA and the rest of the U.S. intelligence agencies, Natasha Bertrand, who amazingly has told one lie after the next as a result of doing this, of just repeating mindlessly what the CIA tells her. They wind her up, the CIA puts things in her ear, and she just mouths them uncritically without thinking about them at all. The fact that the CIA tells her these things to her means they're automatically true. She has worked her way up the media ladder. One lie after the next has propelled her up further because it was all done for the cause that the entire media, with the exception of a few outlets, all vehemently believe in, which is sabotaging and then ultimately defeating Donald Trump. First, she started at Business Insider, where she became a devotee of a fake story about a secret connection, internet connection between Donald Trump and a Russian bank called Alpha Bank. Then she got her way to MSNBC. Ultimately, she got hired by The Atlantic, which is run by the neocon Jeffrey Goldberg, who probably did more to convince Americans of the lie that Saddam Hussein was in a partnership and an alliance with Al-Qaeda in order to convince Americans to support the Iraq war. And for his lies, Jeffrey Goldberg's lies, he's gotten promoted to almost the top rung of the American media ladder, which is editor-in-chief of The Atlantic. This shows you what the American media is. Lying is not an impediment to career success. It's a requirement for it. The more you lie in our media, the more success you have, the more you climb up that ladder. And so it's very appropriate and telling that Natasha Bertrand, the more she lied to undermine Trump, ended up getting hired by The Atlantic, the magazine run by Jeffrey Goldberg, whose entire career was propelled by incredibly destructive lies that he told that resulted in the deaths of thousands of Americans and hundreds of thousands, at least, innocent Iraqis with blood on his hands. Now, running that magazine hired her because she lies the way he lied on behalf of the U.S. security state, and now she finally made it to her ultimate destination at CNN. And every step along the way, Natasha Bertrand tells one lie after the next. Whatever lie composed Russiagate, whatever lie the CIA has disseminated about these crickets that diplomats in Havana heard that she blamed on Russia, every single prong of Russiagate lies came out of the mouth of Natasha Bertrand, and that's why she ended up at CNN. So it's unsurprising that she was the first one, Natasha Bertrand, when she was at Politico, one of the steps along the way, I neglected to mention, she was at Politico in 2020, and there's a story by her that was the first one breaking exclusive. 50 or dozens of ex-intelligence agencies warn that the Hunter Biden laptop was, quote, Russian disinformation. And from there, almost every media outlet recited it. I have to say, the two media outlets that actually expressed some skepticism, that kept saying, wait, we don't actually have any evidence for this claim that all these other outlets like CNN and NBC and Politico and The Atlantic and the rest keep, we don't actually have any real evidence for that. I mean, say what you will about the New York Times and the Washington Post, they lie constantly, they disseminate propaganda constantly. They actually do have some professional journalists who, before they're willing to affirm something, do ask, like, well, what is the evidence that we can at least point to justify our saying this? They'll run things with the skimpiest and most unreliable evidence, but at least they want something to justify the claim. And they realize, you know what, there's nothing to justify this claim that this Hunter Biden laptop is, quote, Russian disinformation. And yet everyone in the media basically repeated it over and over. CNN put James Clapper, whose career should have ended back in 2013, when months before we broke the Snowden story, he went to the Senate and under oath lied to the Senate when he was asked by Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, does the NSA collect and maintain any dossiers of mass information on American citizens? And he said, no, sir, not wittingly. And Senator Wyden then said, does the United States collect information in mass as part of surveillance programs on American citizens? He said, no, sir, not wittingly. And then less than 3 months later, we broke the story in The Guardian that, in fact, the U.S. was doing exactly that which James Clapper to the Senate denied, namely collecting in mass huge amounts of indiscriminate information about American citizens. In fact, Edward Snowden was deciding in his last step whether he wanted to come forward and provide this information to us as journalists when he heard James Clapper go before the Senate and lie and deny that the very program Snowden knew existed, actually it existed, and that's when he decided, you know what, I cannot allow any longer this deceit by government officials to go on. And just like it was true of Jeffrey Goldberg and Natasha Bertrand, lying didn't interfere with James Clapper's career at all. He ended up being hired by CNN. Imagine a top-level security state operative gets caught fundamentally lying about a matter of great importance to the American people, and CNN decides, you know what, Let's go hire that person to deliver the news. The person who we know lied on purpose about the existence of the domestic surveillance program. CNN put James Clapper, that same person, on to say that, oh, in my experience as the director of national intelligence, this looks exactly like Soviet tradecraft to me, exactly like Russian disinformation. And every CNN host, Aaron Burnett and Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon, shook their head yes, just kept repeating it over and over. This is Russian disinformation. Kristen Amanpour, in an interview with a Republican strategist, told her she refused to talk about the Hunter Biden laptop because it was clearly Russian disinformation. And when asked, how do you know that? She said, we're not going to do your job for you. You go prove it. We're not going to do your job for you. We're just journalists. We're going to keep repeating this lie, but it's not our job to determine whether or not it's true. This is what the media did. They united in support of a lie right before the 2020 election. It was a lie. I was in a newsroom, The Intercept, which a week before I tried to publish a story about the Hunter Biden laptop and the media's reaction to it, only to be told that the media outlet that I founded, I was barred from publishing any reporting because in the eyes of The Intercept, it didn't meet the article I wrote. There are lofty editorial standards. Less than a week earlier, The Intercept itself, which was founded to be adversarial to the U.S. security state, I founded it with Jeremy Scahill and Laura Poitras in the middle of the Snowden reporting. We wanted to be adversarial to the U.S. security state as we were doing with the Snowden reporting. That was the whole point of The Intercept. Less than a week before they blocked me and censored me from publishing my reporting on the Hunter Biden laptop, James Risen, who they hired from the New York Times, mostly in order to be a counterweight to the skepticism I was expressing about Russiagate, which was embarrassing editors in front of their liberal friends, they hired James Risen from the New York Times to endorse Russiagate, which he ended up doing. It was the biggest scandal ever in his mind. Trump was a traitor. He said in an article that he published at The Intercept with very lofty editorial standards and then was put on Chris Hayes' show that night to talk about it. He published an article the week before I tried to get my article published affirming the CIA lie that the Hunter Biden laptop was quote-unquote Russian disinformation. That's what the whole media was doing. They all were affirming this, and there was an easy, clear reason why they were saying this over and over, even though, as the New York Post and Washington Post to their credit admitted, there was no evidence for it. Why would they keep saying it over and over, uniting, even though there was no evidence for it? Obviously, it was because they were desperate. They were desperate in these newsrooms to make sure that Donald Trump lost that election. And they were not going to publish any reporting on Joe Biden, no matter how substantiated, no matter how incriminating, no matter how important. No matter what. That's why The Intercept did the unthinkable of censoring me at my own outlet for the first time in 8 years because there was no chance they were going to let me publish and bring attention to a story that their liberal friends might angrily suggest to them could help Donald Trump win a second term. They were pure political activists. It was like working next to Democratic Party operatives. I'm speaking from experience about what was going on in these newsrooms. I have friends in all these newsrooms. It was really that conscious. It was really that overt. They didn't care if what they were saying was true. We were all saying, how can you keep saying this when there's no evidence for it? And they would just ignore it. That's how desperate they were. And not only was there no evidence that this was Russian disinformation, but very early on, well before the election, the evidence emerged and was presented to the public by the New York Post, by Fox News, by the Daily Caller, by conservative outlets, that not only was this not disinformation, but the outlet, the archive was completely authentic. Whatever else you want to say about my journalism, the one thing you can't deny is that I have a lot of experience working with very large archives. I've worked with WikiLeaks and covered WikiLeaks for years on how they publish their archives and have defended them and the way they do it. I was one of the people shepherding the reporting on this gigantic archive that was given to me by Edward Snowden from the bowels of the NSA, the largest leak in the history of the U.S. security state. And then in 2019, I was given a massive archive of hacked telephone calls between top-level Brazilian prosecutors and judges that showed serious corruption and how they were imprisoning people. Reporting that actually ended up freeing the former president of Brazil, Lula da Silva. And in each case, when we got these massive documents, archives, with WikiLeaks and the Snowden case and in the reporting in Brazil, obviously the question is, how can you know these gigantic archives are authentic? How can you know any of the documents are authentic, and how can you know they're all authentic? Obviously, if you publish them and present them as true and they end up being proven to be frauds, your career will be destroyed. Unless you're doing it for the right reasons, as Jeffrey Goldberg and so many others showed. You can lie and publish frauds as long as you're doing it to serve power. But if you publish false documents or fraudulent documents to subvert power or to expose power, your career will be destroyed. You'll never have any journalistic credibility again. So obviously, before you go and publish a huge archive like that, and before I was willing to put my name on an article that obviously would represent that the Hunter Biden archive was authentic, which I knew it was, you need to have evidence. And it's not that easy to identify, to authenticate a large archive like the Hunter Biden archive. But having had so much experience doing it, I knew the telltale signs of authenticity, all of which became immediately present in the Hunter Biden case. One is you can examine the file for evidence of technological evidence of tampering, none of which was present by the people who examined it. But a major one, the most important one, is when we got the Snowden archive, one of the ways we determined that it was authentic enough to stake our careers on was there were emails in there to and from various people, government officials and others, and we were able to go to those people and say, we have an archive that purports to show emails that you got back in 2011 or 2012 or 2013. Can you check your email or phone and let me know what these emails say? Because I have an email in this archive that's purported to be that, and I want to match what's in the archive to what you actually got in real time. And then the source goes and shows you, here's the email I got on December 15, 2012. And then you can see it matches word for word what's in the archive you've been given. That's pretty strong proof of authenticity. And there are other indicia as well of how you determine archives like this are in fact authentic, including by going to sources who will tell you that in fact they've worked with these materials before. In the Hunter Biden case, somebody who was on a lot of the emails that were the centerpiece of the Hunter Biden reporting, Tony Babalinsky, the person I mentioned before, who was Hunter Biden's business partner and therefore obviously heavily involved in a lot of these ongoings, these documents that came from the Hunter Biden laptop, was able to show Fox reporters, look, here's my email inbox. Here's the emails I got in real time back in 2017, 2018, 2015. And you can match word for word what's in my email, in my Gmail or my phone, to what's in that archive. And that's one way that you know the archive is authentic. All of the indicia of authenticity that WikiLeaks used to publish its archives, that we used in both the Snowden and Brazil case, were there from the beginning in the Hunter Biden archive. That's why I was willing to, again, stake my reputation and my career on an article that would bear my byline and my name in order to treat the Hunter Biden laptop documents as what I knew they were, which was authentic. It was easy to see if you wanted to see. People have made a big deal of the fact that with the election over and with Donald Trump successfully defeated and vanquished and Biden elected, that ever since then, authenticity has been affirmed by the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, most recently CBS. Several months after the election, it got little attention, but a reporter, a great reporter at Politico named Ben Schrechtinger, published a book called The Bidens. And in that book, he documented the evidence he obtained with just shoe leather reporting that proved that the Hunter Biden archive was fully authentic. He went and did FOIA requests to various governments for secret documents that were not public. And when he obtained them, he compared those documents to what was in the Hunter Biden laptop. He interviewed sources. He compiled an entire mountain of evidence proving that the Hunter Biden laptop was authentic. It was well known well before all these liberal corporate outlets admitted it after the election. Ben Schrechtinger proved it in his book in Politico, which was mostly ignored. But well before the election, way back when they were all saying that this was Russian disinformation, the evidence was available then. That's why I was willing to put my name on it. They just didn't want to see it. And it was driving me crazy at the time, because I would look at CNN or look at NBC or read these shitty Brooklyn-based digital media outlets, and they'd all be, they were like puppets who had united to just constantly ratify over and over an obvious lie. The Huffington Post practically made a campaign video for Joe Biden with sinister music and different imagery that just put on the screen absolute lies. Intelligence agents affirm that the Hunter Biden materials are Russian disinformation. They were produced by Rudy Giuliani. None of these people have an iota of integrity. They are compulsive liars. I'm telling you, they are willing to lie because they know that lying is necessary for career advancement. They look at Jeffrey Goldberg and Natasha Bertrand and see what has happened to them. If you lie for the right cause in media, that is the only way your career advances within these institutions. And I would constantly say over and over every day, how can you say this is Russian disinformation? Where's the evidence? In fact, here's the mountain of evidence proving that the laptop is authentic. And it just didn't make a dent because they didn't care if it were true. They only cared about one thing, which is what's coming out of our mouth, whether true or false, helpful to the supreme cause of defeating Donald Trump? That is all they cared about as journalists. And that is why I say that these polls showing that the public despises journalists and holds them in contempt and doesn't trust them and puts no faith, all of that is completely valid. It's totally warranted. In fact, if you trust the media, you're essentially crazy, ignorant. If you trust these media outlets, because they lie to your face every day, and the evidence that they're doing so is clear, and most Americans know it. Most Americans understand it. That's why polls show that the media is at its lowest level of trust and faith in the history of the United States, because it doesn't take me to say this. People know this in their bones. And they never lied more deliberately or more concertedly or more in unison than days leading up to the 2020 election, particularly about this Hunter Biden story. Now, if all that had happened was that they lied about the Hunter Biden documents, it would be scandalous, but it wouldn't be anything out of the ordinary. The media lies every day. They lied for 5 straight years about Donald Trump in order to undermine his presidency. Their main story, remember, the main story in the United States for 5 years, from the time Trump in 2016 became the general election candidate against Hillary Clinton until the time that he walked out of the White House, 5 straight years, the number one story in our media was not about jobs or inflation or foreign policy or war or anything else. It was Russiagate. It was the claim, the central claim, the two central claims were that the Trump campaign had illegally colluded with Russia to hack into the emails of the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign in order to give them to WikiLeaks. That it wasn't the Russians who did it. It was the Russians working with the Trump campaign in collusion, in a conspiracy, in collaboration to hack their enemies, their opponents, the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign, in order to give those emails to WikiLeaks. The media, that happened was an absolute gospel truth to most of the media. They said it over and over. Only for the hero that they had created, Robert Mueller, who they kept telling us was going to come any minute and arrest Donald Trump and his family and his closest aides for having illegally colluded with Russia, to end his investigation by concluding explicitly that the investigation of 18 months with unlimited budget, with unlimited subpoena power, did not establish that everything the media had spent years telling you was in fact true, that the Trump administration colluded with Russia. And the other part of that story, which is even crazier and more baseless and more deranged, was that the United States had essentially been taken over by the Kremlin because Vladimir Putin possessed sexual, financial, and other forms of blackmail leverage over Donald Trump, and then therefore could tell him what it is that Donald Trump had to do to serve Russian interests at the expense of American interests. A more deranged conspiracy theory can barely be imagined. And yet it was disseminated over and over by the same people in the media who now tell you they need the power to censor the internet to prevent untrue conspiracy theories and disinformation campaigns from contaminating our politics. What more deranged disinformation campaign can there ever be than this crazy conspiracy theory they invented? And it's especially amazing because almost everything the Trump administration did by itself guts the entire conspiracy theory. The two worst things you could do to the Kremlin and their vital interest were things the Trump administration and Donald Trump specifically did. Number one, Donald Trump armed Ukraine. He sent lethal arms to Ukraine. This is something Barack Obama refused to do on the grounds that it wasn't worth it. It wasn't within America's vital interest to confront Russia over Ukraine by arming them. And Obama refused to do so until the very end when some weapons started going, but mostly he refused. Donald Trump came in and reversed that policy that was so positive and beneficial to Russia. The Trump administration flooded Ukraine with lethal weapons, which, as we now know, is considered by the Kremlin to be of the utmost danger and damage to the Kremlin's vital interest. If the Kremlin controlled Trump, as the media told you over and over that it did, under no circumstances would Trump be sending lethal arms to Ukraine, the single worst thing that you could do to the Kremlin. That alone should have made these idiots and liars understand in the moment that what we've been saying over and over, the whole Helsinki treason summit and all of that, was utter bullshit. It was just a manufactured, concocted conspiracy theory of the kind you would find in any QAnon forum, and yet it ended up dominating our politics for years. The second thing that Trump did that was almost as threatening, perhaps more so even, to the Kremlin's vital interest than arming Ukraine, was Trump was obsessed with sabotaging Nord Stream 2, the pipeline that would have connected Russia and Germany and enabled Russia to sell enormous amounts of natural gas, cheap natural gas, to Europe, which the Kremlin viewed as crucial to the country's economic prosperity. Trump did everything he possibly could to sabotage that pipeline. He kept telling the Germans over and over. First of all, he mocked the Germans at the UN for being so dependent on Russian gas, told them they were going to pay a price for that. They laughed in his face. And less than 2 years later, the German economy is on the verge of being wrecked along with Europe's, while its people suffer with no energy through the very harsh winter. Why? Because Germany is completely dependent on Russian gas, the way Trump warned them they were and shouldn't be. And Russia is therefore using its leverage to punish European countries for their support of Ukraine by slowly turning off the gas whenever it suits them. He also kept demanding and threatening Germany, look, we, the United States, pay for your defense. You don't pay for your defense. We pay for your defense. We have 30,000 troops stationed in Germany in permanent military bases to protect you and your citizens. Given the enormous amounts of money that we pay, said Trump, to protect you in Germany, he would constantly tell this to Angela Merkel privately and publicly, and given the risk to our own citizens' lives on these permanent military bases that we have in order to go to war, in order to keep you safe, you shouldn't be buying your natural gas from Russia. You should be buying it from the United States. That's the least you could do. So Trump mounted these rational arguments, and he badgered and coerced and humiliated and tried to persuade. He did everything he could to convince Angela Merkel in Germany not to buy their natural gas from Russia in order to destroy Nord Stream 2. Arguably, the only other worse thing you could do to the Kremlin's vital interests than what the other thing that Trump did, which was flood Ukraine with lethal weapons. So anyone who was an actual journalist who was just thinking rationally, using basic common sense, immediately would have understood the actions Donald Trump and his administration are taking are not just in tension with, but completely negate this conspiracy theory that we've been telling the American public for years is true, namely that the Kremlin controls Donald Trump. But of course, they never stop saying it. To this day, they probably believe it. And will probably resurrect it for the 2024 campaign if Trump becomes the nominee. Because again, they don't care what's true and false. They know that lying is good for their careers if it undermines Trump. And so that's what they would do. So if all they were doing is lying about these Hunter Biden documents, it would be disturbing. I'd be on here condemning it. I'd be telling you that you're right to hate these media outlets and the journalists who work for them because they're liars who fundamentally violate the role they claim they play in society, and they deserve your contempt and distrust. But it wouldn't be such an extraordinary event. Remember, I started off by classifying this event as the single biggest media scandal of the last 10 years. All it was them lying about these documents, calling it Russian disinformation. It would just be like any other lie they tell every day. what made this so extraordinary, so impactful, so scandalous, is that this lie about these documents was then seized upon.
Thank you for listening.
First by Twitter and then by Facebook.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Now that you see how blatantly the midterms have been stolen, how many other times have you been played? The Green New Deal? The pandemic and the vax? Sandy Hook and the courts? The missing gas chambers? Bio and chem labs in Ukraine? Bill Binney, Catherine Horton, Nick Kohlerstrom, Uli Damagard, Tina Pollard-Sachs, and many more. You don't want to miss my third annual False Flags and Conspiracy Virtual Conference, 3 to 4 December 2022. 24 speakers, 26 presentations. Check it out at jameshfetzer.org. This one is for history.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser.